Here we are then. We are the last in this little series of Wild Thing, or the last for now in any case. And you might hear a little bit of sort of wind in the background. I suspect you're going to hear quite a bit more in a few minutes because we are up on to the mountain, or just off the main Titicus Mountain Road on the Brandywell Road. People might well know, beautiful stretch of road on a day like today, albeit a little bit windy. And we've come up to look at peatlands and think about peatlands and see the area, talk a little bit about the importance of the area as habitat and for the environment, and also the work going on to restore and conserve the area around here. And at the moment we're sheltering from the wind in the van. Sun's out, but it is rather breezy, and I've come to meet up with, well, I'll allow her to introduce herself.
Hi, I'm Sarah Hickey, so I'm the peatland officer at DEFA.
Great. Well, we are up on the road here, on the Brandywell Road. I was saying this is your office. I know you're up here yesterday and been up here all this morning as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Not a bad office on a day like this. Slightly different story in the middle of winter when it's raining and windy, but today's like this, it's the perfect place to be.
This is, yeah, this is when it pays dividends.
Absolutely.
So what actually, what, we'll start off at the beginning. When we say peatlands, what exactly do we mean?
So peatlands are areas of land that are covered in a layer of peat. So peat is kind of a partially decomposed vegetation layer, very high in organic content, very high in carbon and water as well. And a lot of our hills are blanketed in peat of varying depths. So the area we're going to visit today has quite deep peat, so it's about 2 meters in deep in places, and other areas are much shallower. That's kind of what a peatland is. It has typical peatland vegetation when it's in good condition, and really a nice habitat up here.
And what's the importance to the environment, or sort of, I know for obviously Biosphere, Isle of Man and such like, what would you say is the importance of the peatland habitat?
So peatlands are important for a real variety of reasons. So one of the ones people will be familiar with is that they are a really important store of carbon. So if we look at peatlands globally, they cover about 3% of the land surface, but they store more carbon than all of the world's forests combined. So they're a really important store of carbon. So that's one aspect of it. They're also really important for wildlife. So peatland habitats should be nice, wet places, as we'll find out soon.
I brought my Wellingtons, yeah. I was warned.
And wet areas are really important for breeding invertebrates. And those invertebrates are important food sources for breeding birds as well. We're just coming into the bird breeding season up here, and when the little chicks are hatched, having lots of invertebrates around are a really important food source for them. So again, really, really good for wildlife. We also have lots of very rare plant species that are only found on peatland areas. One of the interesting ones we get on peatlands over here is sundew, which is actually a carnivorous plant. So they can't get enough nutrients from the soil, so they actually trap insects to add to their diet. So really beautiful little plants that we find up here. So as well as wildlife and carbon, having damp hills is really important to prevent wildfires. We're moving into periods of time where we have lots of dry spells, and wildfire is a real risk. So if we can keep the hills nice and wet, that risk is reduced. Our peatlands filter lots of rainwater as well. So most of our peatlands are most of our water catchment areas, so with all the water that goes into our reservoirs, comes from peatland areas. And if the peat is in poor condition and eroding, it ends up in our reservoirs and it fills them up with silt at the bottom, and it also adds to the water treatment costs. So if we can reduce the amount of peat washing into our reservoirs, that's a real bonus for our drinking water. And it also can help reduce flooding downslope. So some of our towns downslope of the hills are a bit prone to flooding, and if we can get our peatlands in good condition with the right kind of vegetation that should be there, that can slow the water flowing off the hillsides and help reduce flooding as well.
And we were just saying, when we sort of drove up here and parked, those people of a certain age, I'm the certain age, would remember back in the day, of course, there used to be peat cutting up here. You could sort of buy a sort of a plot or a patch, and you could come up and cut peat for burning in those days. That's all long gone.
Yes, I mean, it was a very important part of Manx culture and history. There's obviously very limited natural tree cover on the island, and there has been for quite a few hundred years. And so peat was one of the primary sources of fuel for a lot of people. And it was a real ritual going up to the hillside. It was a family group or a small community, and going and cutting fuel, cutting the peat for fuel. So that it has been a really important part of Manx history, and there's lots of music and song celebrating that which happened at this sort of time of year, actually beginning of May. But obviously nowadays we don't need to rely on peat for fuel, and the importance of peatlands has been recognised. So part of what we are doing is trying to repair the damage that was done by peat cutting. Sometimes the damage is limited and the hills kind of repair themselves, but in a lot of cases the bare peat is subject to erosion from water and wind, and it'll just keep getting worse and worse unless it's fixed.
So just give us, we're going to go and take a look now, so give us an idea of the sort of work that actually goes on here then.
So a lot of the work we've been doing starts off with the use of a digger, which sounds like quite extreme on such a habitat. But the diggers are fitted with low ground pressure tracks, so they kind of float over the peatland habitat and cause very minimal damage. So we use diggers to do what is called reprofiling the peat tags. So where we have a bare steep cliff of peat, the digger will peel back the vegetation, smooth the peat down to a gentle angle, and then recover it with vegetation as well. And then we go up and sort of tidy up any bits that have got still bare peat or that need to stop the water flowing around the peat. We'll go up and fix those with geotextiles that we'll have a look at shortly. So that's one of the things we do. There is an area we'll look at as well that was very, very wet. And we thought, well, if we put a digger on here, it's going to do more harm than good. So we've done all that work by hand. So it's been a bit more labour intensive.
And is this work that goes on all year round, or just specifically during the summer months, or how does that work?
So that kind of work goes on between August and March. So during the winter mostly, where the weather's usually terrible.
Yep.
The reason we do it at that time of year is to avoid disturbing ground nesting birds and also lambing. So yeah, we get most of our work done at that time of year, and then the rest of the summer season we'll be sorting out survey work for the following season and contracts and things like that. Yeah, monitoring all the vegetation and the impacts as
well. Yeah. And is it sort of long-term work, as I call it? Is it something, do you see the results fairly quickly, or is it something that takes really years to regenerate?
So it's a mixture of both, really. Some areas, and you'll see this as we go around, have had a massive change within, you know, literally 6 months. You can see a big change already, and then but to see the full impact will take a lot longer. So there are some short-term obvious gains, but yeah, long-term we're looking probably 10 years or more before it kind of looks more back to a natural state.
Brilliant. Yeah. And how long have you been involved in the work?
So in terms of this actual restoration work, it's been about 2.5 years now. But prior to that, I was involved. I set up the survey of the peatland while I was working with Manx Wildlife Trust. So before we started this work, we needed to know where our peat was and how deep it was. So I started off by surveying the whole of the uplands of the Isle of Man.
Wow.
on a grid of approximately 150 metres. So that it's kind of a lot of walking off the path, which can be challenging in places, but we're almost done. It's taken a long time. It's been on and off with the work, but we've almost surveyed the whole of the upland areas of the Isle of Man. So yeah, and that's been going on since 2017, I think. So, yeah.
Terrific. Right, okay. It's Wellington's on then. We'll brave the wind and go and see some of the great work you've been doing. And it is windy, as you can probably tell.
A couple of times recently.
Ah, terrific.
Was it? Yeah.
And no sooner are we just a few feet away from the truck and we can see a hen harrier. Brilliant, just out over the peatlands. And just floating in the wind. Gotta watch your footing around here because it's a bit marshy. So, okay, so we have, well, to the untrained eye, it's part of the bank is actually netted, and then you have like a sort of a, what looks like a natural material. Is this wool, or what fibre is this?
So this is actually coir. It's called coir material. It's a byproduct of coconuts. And
I thought you're getting compost, didn't you? Yeah,
yes, you do. Yeah. And so it's really good for peatland restoration work. It's biodegradable in a few years. So it will rot away and hopefully disappear back into the landscape. The reason we use it on places like this, once the digger has been in and reprofiled the bare peat, sometimes there's a bit of bare peat left. It can't all be covered with vegetation. So we get heather that's been harvested on the local hills, and we cover loads of heather brush on the bare peat, and then we hold it in place with the netting. On this site here, we've also put coir logs at the base as well, and that prevents water from eroding the peat away and just gives it a bit of extra protection. And the coir is really good at helping plant growth come through as well. You can see some plants starting to grow up through it.
Yeah, yeah.
This has only been in a year or so, so over the next few years it'll disappear back into the landscape.
So it just stays here, and gradually, like I said, as the sort of landscape covers it over, it just rots away once it's
Absolutely.
Done its job.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
So. Brilliant. Right, okay, we'll march on there into the wind. And it is a beautiful day. I mean, it's breezy, but it is, you're reminded of, you know, how beautiful the uplands are here and around the peatlands. I mean, not only from an environmental point of view, but obviously from an aesthetic point of view, it's a really beautiful part of the island. Windy, as you can hear. And we've just tramped a little bit further down away from the truck and sort of off the road down onto the peatlands. Gorgeous day up. It's just so lovely wandering around and just seeing the views and looking at the landscape. And again, we've just come down into a sort of, almost looks like a little dub area, trying to find a wee bit of shelter from the wind as best we can. So what are we looking at here then? This is obviously, there's been work going on here again. Tell us what it was like and what's happened now.
Yeah, so it used to look very different to it does now. This area was actually, if we'd come a couple of years ago, it would have been like a big bowl with vertical sides of bare peat and bare peat along the bottom. And where I'm sitting now would have been a big hole that was called a peat pipe, so an entrance to a peat pipe. And there was a water flowing from above down through this big eroding bowl of peat, and then underground through a peat pipe that was probably about sort of 80-90 centimeters in diameter, so it was pretty big, and it was eroding the peat away, and the surrounding peat was all dry, and it wasn't a very nice place to be. So like I say, last winter, not the winter just gone, the one before, our digger contractors came and they've reprofiled all of the edges of this, what was a steep bowl, into a nice smooth, slowly vegetating habitat now. So you can see most of the bare peat is covered, and we've been left with a nice little shallow pool where it used to be bare peat in the bottom before. And so this is stopping, reducing the amount of erosion and trapping any sediment that is eroding. And also it's creating a nice little habitat for insects. And we're hoping we'll attract things like dragonflies this area.
Yeah, that would be perfect for that sort of stuff. And all this land, again, we were just talking as we were coming down, so all the land in this upland area all actually belongs to the Manx government.
It does, yes. Yeah. So it, there are some areas in the uplands that are privately owned, but the vast majority is owned by the government. And we have tenant farmers that farm it with livestock, mostly sheep and occasional cattle.
It always amazed me, we've just seen a couple of sheep as we're wandering around. It always amazes me whenever I come across this section of road how they ever manage to gather the sheep back up again, because they just seem to be all over the place.
It must be a really big job, yeah, especially on some of these remote hillsides, and they're not easy to get around, that's for sure.
And so when the work, I mean, do you sort of direct the work from your position, or do you actually have to get hands on yourself, or how does that work?
A bit of both. So I draw, once I've surveyed an area, we draw up a restoration plan for our digger contractors. So, but it's not only just handing over a plan, I also go and mark out what needs to be done on site, because it's sometimes hard to know exactly what needs to be done. And then the work that gets done after the digger's been on site, so installing the geotextiles, we do have a contractor who does a lot of that work, but sometimes it's more than one person job, so I got out and help. And one of the main difficulties with the work actually is getting the materials to the site, so that we quite often we'll help with getting the materials to the site using a Polaris off-road vehicle. But also a lot of it is done by hand, so there's no getting away from just hauling materials and lifting them, so it can be quite hard work. but it does keep you warm in the winter.
Oh, I bet it does. Well, we were saying, yes, on a day like today, you think a lot of people would think, gosh, she's got a wonderful job out there in the wonderful uplands, gorgeous views in your own office here, but perhaps not quite so much in the winter.
It can definitely be challenging. I can usually find some office jobs that need to be done on the really worst days. But yeah, we do need to be out in all weathers, really.
Now, we were talking about sort of species before, and obviously we think it was a hen harrier, certainly. Yeah. Just above us as we got out of the truck and coming down, you were mentioning sundews and such like.
Yeah.
As well. I mean, are the sort of species and the spread of species, are these monitored as well?
Yeah, so in some areas I've set up monitoring plots and transects, so that looking at what vegetation was there before the work was done, and what changes after the work is done. With vegetation though, it does tend to be a very long-term process, so I probably won't notice any change for a few years. But yeah, we definitely take before and after photos as well to see how things are changing, how the vegetation's coming through on bare areas. And we'll also be looking more at looking at invertebrates as well and seeing what's around. So we mentioned sort of dragonflies, and birds as well, what birds are around. So this area could be pretty good for snipe, and I have seen snipe up above the road a few times. So a lot of the upland birds need these wet areas to provide food for their young. So we'll be keeping an eye on that as well.
Do we have a better understanding now? Because I mean, obviously times change and needs change and habits change and such like, and we were saying how people once used to cut the peat here, but do we have a better understanding of the importance that habitats like this play to not just the sort of biosphere Isle of Man, but on a global scale?
I think there's definitely a growing awareness. There's a big movement in the UK for peatland restoration, and yeah, there's definitely a growing awareness. Lots of peatland projects are spreading the word through education in schools and just social media as well. So there is more awareness. I think people who get out and about in the hills for hobbies and things also appreciate how important they are for that as well. But yeah, in terms of wildlife and looking after our climate as well, and flood risk, and all the things that we might see more issues with in future. It's people are becoming more aware of it.
And you were saying you had a full house during Wildlife Week. You had a full house for a tour around the peatlands with people. And what sort of questions were they asking? Was it the same sort of thing? Or what sort of interest did people have in it?
Yeah, there was a wide range of interest, to be honest. It was really nice. We had people who had cut peat historically as young people, children. They had a growing appreciation of, although that was important in those days culturally, now we need to kind of protect them. So there was lots of questions about that and the wildlife, and it was really nice to see people engaged and interested in what we're doing. And hopefully we'll be holding some more volunteering events towards the end of the summer as well. They've been popular in the past, so it's really nice to get people involved in practically doing the work and having that involvement.
So just crossed the road, and we're going up the other side just to take a look at a bit of the work done on the other side of the road here. More work done by hand up on this section, and can't stop turning around to look at the view. Actually, it's so glorious on a day like today. But just heading up, you can see, oh, you're right, there's some more of the corridor. Wow, this is good. Yeah,
trial wall plots as well.
Oh, brilliant. So again, if you're of a certain age, this is the part I always remember, seeing the peat diggers having their stakes, stacking up their mounds of peat or their sort of squares of peat, sometimes covered with tarpaulins and things. Never had them on myself, although my wife and her parents used to do it, or at least her dad did back in the day. Okay. So, more work on this side, quite a bit wetter, so this is work you were saying done far more by hand on this side.
Yeah, so this has all been done by hand. We didn't want to put a digger on this site because it might cause damage to the very soft ground. So what we've done, a mixture of covering the hags with geotextiles, and also we had quite a problem on this site with erosion from water flowing over bare peat. So you can see behind us here, we've got some horseshoe shaped.
They're like sort of little dams.
Yeah, little dams. Yeah. So they're mini dams. They're not designed to hold loads of water back, but you can see, even though it's been dry for 2 weeks, we still have some water in
there. Yeah, there is.
And yeah, they just kind of slow the flow of water and they trap the peaty sediment behind them. So it stops it rushing down into our watercourses and reservoirs as well.
Well, I was saying this is the area I really remember as a kid seeing these sort of stakes out and where people were peat cutting.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. This whole hillside above the Brandywell Road here was one of the main public turbaries, which is the term for peat cutting areas. And if you want
turbaries,
yes.
I've learnt something new there.
And if you wanted to come up and cut peat in recent years, you would have applied for a licence and been given a plot up here.
Yeah. When did the, I vaguely remember, but when did the peat cutting end, do you recall?
Yes, so it was actually banned officially in 2020.
Oh, right, so it's relatively recent. I knew it was quite recent sort of going on, yeah.
Yes, and then, so I think it hadn't, not many people had licences prior to that, but it was determined that actually, due to the importance of peatland and the fact that people weren't needing to cut peat anymore, really, it was going to be stopped.
Yeah, exactly. And as we were saying before, I think it's that sort of understanding, perhaps, maybe, which we didn't have, perhaps, in the same way 40, 50, 100 years ago. And I suppose, again, it's just changing trends, isn't it? We don't really need to take the peat in the same way. And a far better understanding of the work that it actually does here.
Absolutely. I mean, in the past, at least, you know, for the last hundreds of years, these kind of hill areas were thought of as wastelands. You know, they weren't agriculturally productive and people just thought they were a waste of, you know, resources. They, you know, so they would try and drain them and I guess cutting for fuel was one sense that they could use them as a resource. But now we're recognising how important they are for wildlife, but also for our drinking water supply and drought resilience and, you know, flood management. So there's a whole raft of reasons why they're so important. And luckily we're coming to recognise that now.
Absolutely. And is the work then, will it be ongoing indefinitely, or do you see it as a sort of set period of work to restore the damaged, the peat cutting over the years, or will it go on ad infinitum?
Well, we have funding for another 4 years of work, so we're hoping that that will give us enough time to do most of the work, the really, you know, big work on these damaged sites. But there will need to be ongoing maintenance and monitoring of these sites. It won't be as big a job, but it will be just checking, does anything I need fixing up and replacing and things like that. So there will ongoing upland management is has been part of DEFA's work for a long time, and have a massive estate of about 20,000 acres, yeah, so it's a big job generally, but looking after these peatland areas into the future will be just part of that kind of work.
And what do you see when you, I mean, have you had any great sightings up here? We spotted hopefully the hen harrier. Yeah. I certainly saw a mountain hare just coming up. Do you get to see when you're working up here quite a lot of the wildlife?
Yes, I mean, I've seen on this particular site snipe a few times, which is really nice. They love the little wet pools that are created in this area. And skylarks at this time of year. We can't hear any today because of the wind.
Too windy.
But normally, on a slightly calmer day, we'll hear loads of skylarks singing, and that's a really nice thing to hear. But quite often, we do see wildlife, but quite often I'm just immersed in the plants and as well. So I do like the sphagnum moss.
Yeah.
Which I'll show you some in a minute.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, let's go and take a look and we can see some.
Yeah, we've got lots of the
place. Oh, right. Just a bit further up, so we'll go and take a wee look up there.
Right, we'll just have a look over here. It's not looking at its best at this time of year. So I've got to find a green bit for you.
Here we go.
So autumn winter is the best time to view sphagnum moss because it changes into beautiful oranges and greens and reds. This time of year, it's sort of end of winter, spring, it's looking a little bit worse for wear, especially after a dry period. But we found a nice patch of green sphagnum there. This is one of the main peat building plants. It's like a big sponge, really, so it absorbs lots of water, and it's also it prevents the the plant material decaying. It kind of creates a really nice acidic habitat, waterlogged habitat, so it's what builds the peat in the first place. So it's a really important plant, and we've got lots of it on this site, which is really nice. And it can sometimes create these huge big hummocks of sphagnum moss, and that helps with slowing flow of water through the hills as well. So,
and again, that's something else I remember when I was much younger, that people would collect sphagnum moss for sort of, you know, lining their hanging baskets and this sort of thing. Again, no longer allowed.
No, we wouldn't recommend it at all. I mean, you can buy it from, I guess you can buy it from garden centres, and there's places that do grow it specifically for that, because it's I guess it holds onto the water, which is what you want for plant growth. But yeah, I wouldn't recommend collecting from the hillside. It's very easily damaged, and we want to have as much sphagnum moss as possible on our hills to keep them nice and wet.
Exactly. And there is, again, just talking about the peat, thinking, certainly when I first started out gardening in the sort of early 70s or mid 70s, you'd quite often get bags of peat for the garden from the garden centres. And it's now you really don't see it. Again, you quite often see coir composts, you see alternatives, and I think people have moved away from this whole idea of using peat for gardening in the same way that they did 50 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, there's still people who would say that peat and compost is better than non-peat and compost in terms of plant growth, but people are developing peat-free composts all the time, and they are almost as good now. So there's no real reason to need to use peat anymore for growing plants. The peat-free options are definitely getting better and better all the time.
Oh, definitely. And I've used the coir stuff, and it seems really good.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just a little bit further up, so what have we got here? It's like someone's left their bed bolster out here.
Yeah, so this is one of our wool rolls, our wool logs. We are trialling these at the moment as a potential alternative to using coir logs for our restoration work. This was put in a few weeks ago, and we are doing monitoring on it to see whether it's as effective and useful as the coir product. One of the things we're looking at is, does it affect the water around it? Peatlands are a very naturally low nutrient environment, so if we have a product that puts nutrients into the environment, it will change the habitat, so we've got to make sure that that's not going to be an issue. So we'll be looking at that, and also just to check that it's as effective at doing the job as the coir logs.
And would this be just left in place the same as the coir?
Yes, so the idea is it's left in place like the coir. It will break down, but one of the things we're looking at, how long does it take to break down?
It looks more substantial to a degree, but I don't know from the outside.
It does look more substantial. There's been trials in the UK that have shown that it doesn't last as long as coir.
Oh, wow.
But I think it depends on how the product is made, so there's different methods of making the wool log, so we'll see what this one looks like. You're right, it does look quite substantial. So.
Oh, it does.
And one other issue they've had in some places in the UK is that they have had corvids, like the crows and things, pecking the wool logs, thinking they're a dead sheep. So we'll check to see whether that's going to be an issue on these. So far they look okay.
They do. I hadn't thought of that, but now that you've mentioned it, I could see why they might.
Yeah,
absolutely.
The crows are pretty intelligent though, luckily, so I think they might try it once and then realise there's nothing to be had there.
Yeah. No food to be had. Well, listen, it's been great talking today and just getting a taste of some of the great work going on up here. And is there anywhere, if people are interested, is there anything online people can read more about the work going on here?
Yes, we have a website, so it's manxpeat.org. And there's lots of information there and resources to learn all about peatlands and the kind of work we're doing. And we also have regular social media updates as well. So you can follow us on Facebook or LinkedIn and Blue Sky. And
all those.
Yeah, all of those ones. Yeah, there's links on our website.
Great. Well, it's been lovely talking to you today. Thanks very much for spending the time and sparing time in your busy schedule to come out and show us a little bit around here. And I'd better let you crack on.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to show you around.
Wild Thing.